I knew would give me cramp eventually, but I couldn't bear to pull away.
"Are you awake?"
I whispered. He didn't answer for a moment, and I thought that he had fallen asleep, in that way he had of slipping out of consciousness between one breath and the next. But then he stirred and spoke.
"Just."
"I can't sleep."
"Shh."
He rolled over in my arms, touching my face.
"It's okay, it's all over."
"It's not that. It's..."
"Are you still thinking about her?"
I nodded in the darkness, and he sighed.
"When you saw her body..."
I started, but he shook his head.
"I didn't."
"What do you mean? I thought the police sent you photographs to identify."
"It wasn't a body. I wish it had been. If I'd seen it was Carrie's corpse, not yours, I wouldn't have spent 2 days in hell thinking you were dead. It was just clothes. Photographs of clothes."
"Why did they do that?" It seemed an odd decision. Why ask Judah to identify the clothes and not the body? I felt Judah's shoulders lift in the darkness in a shrug.
"I don't know. At the time, I assumed it was because the body was too bashed up. But I spoke to the FLO in charge of the case after you called. I wanted to find out how the hell they could have got it so wrong. And she spoke to the Norwegians and seemed to think it was because the clothes were found separately."
"Huh." I lay there, trying to puzzle it out. Had Carrie kicked off the boots and hoodie to try and swim for it in a desperate attempt to get away from Bulmer? I was almost afraid to go to sleep, expecting to be haunted by Carrie's reproachful face. But when I finally closed my eyes, it was Bulmer's face that rose up in front of me, laughing, his grey hair ruffled by the wind as he tumbled down, down from the deck of the Aurora. I opened my eyes, my heart thumping, trying to remember that he was gone, that I was safe, that Judah was lying in my arms and the whole nightmare was over and done with. But it wasn't, because I just didn't believe what had happened. It wasn't just Carrie's death that I couldn't accept, it was Bulmer's. Not because I thought he should have lived, but because his death, out of all of it, just didn't make sense. Carrie's suicide I could have believed, but not his. Try as I might, I couldn't imagine that man with his cold, fierce determination giving up. He had fought so hard, played his cards with such cold daring. Would he really throw in his hand just like that? It didn't seem possible. But it was, and I had to accept that. He was gone. I shut my eyes again, pushing his spectre away from me, and I curled my body around Judah's, and I thought, very deliberately, about the future, about New York, and about the leap of faith I was about to make. For a moment, I saw a sharp, flashing image imprinted on the darkness of my closed lids, myself poised on the very edge of a high, high place, balancing on a rail, the dark waves below. But I had no fear. I had fallen before, and I'd survived. Evening Standard, Thursday the 26th of November. Mystery woman in Aurora drowning identified. Almost 2 months after the shocking discovery of two bodies at sea, one of them British businessman and peer Richard Bulmer, Norwegian police have today released a statement announcing the identity of the body dredged up by fishermen in the North Sea to be that of his wife, Anne Bulmer, heiress to the billion-pound Lyngstad fortune. The body of Lord Bulmer was found several hundred miles away by police divers searching the coastal waters near Bergen in Norway, after the peer was reported missing from his boat, the exclusive boutique cruise liner, the Aurora Borealis. Not suicide. The English language statement confirms the previous announcement by Norwegian police that the cause of Lady Bulmer's death was drowning, while Lord Bulmer's death was due to a gunshot wound to the temple. However, the document contradicts earlier reports of Lord Bulmer's suicide, stating simply that the injury was not self-inflicted, according to the findings of the local pathologist. The discovery of a gun, recovered alongside Lord Bulmer's body and wrapped in clothing belonging to missing British journalist Laura Blacklock, led to initial speculation that his death was connected to her disappearance some days before. Miss Blacklock was later found alive and well in Norway, but her parents have called for a police inquiry after they were left for several days believing that the body had been identified as that of their missing daughter. Scotland Yard stressed that the body had never at any stage been identified as Miss Blacklock, but admitted that the finding of Miss Blacklock's clothes had been poorly communicated to the family. They blamed the failings on cross-force communication issues and have said that they are in private contact with the Blacklock family over the incident. In answer to the Standards inquiry, a Norwegian police spokesperson stated that although they have interviewed Miss Blacklock in connection with the case, they are not considering the Briton as a suspect in either death, and that their investigations are continuing. Banking Live Chat, 6th of December, 4:15 p.m.
Hi, welcome to Customer Services Live Chat. You are speaking with Ajesh from Personal Banking. How can I help you today, Miss Blacklock?
Hi, I'm emailing because I've received an odd credit to my account. I wanted to check if you had any info on the sender. Thanks. Lo.
Hi, Miss Blacklock. Sure, I can look into that. Is it okay if I call you Laura?
Yep, that's fine.
What is the transaction you are concerned about, Laura?
It's the one 2 days ago, dated 4th of December, for 40,000 Swiss francs.
Let me check that for you. I have your details here. Is it the transaction with the reference Tiggers Bounce?
Yes, that's correct.
I have checked the sort code. It's a Swiss bank account based in Bern. I'm sorry to say I do not have any information on the identity of the bank account holder. It is a numbered account. Does the reference convey anything?
It's fine. Thanks. No worries. I'm pretty sure it's from a friend. I just wanted to check. Thanks for looking into it.
You're welcome. Is there anything else I can help you with today, Laura?
No, that's fine. Thanks, and goodbye.
The Woman in Cabin 10 was written by Ruth Ware and read by Imogen Church. The mix engineer was Terry Hogan. This has been a presentation of Simon & Schuster Audio. The Woman in Cabin 10 is available in print from Scout Press.
What follows is a preview of Ruth Ware's The Lying Game, read by Imogen Church.
The reach is wide and quiet this morning. The pale blue sky streaked with pink mackerel belly clouds, the shallow sea barely rippling in the slight breeze. And so the sound of the dog barking breaks into the calm like gunshots, setting flocks of gulls crying and wheeling in the air. Plovers and terns explode up as the dog bounds joyously down the riverbank, scampering down the runnelled side where the earth turns from spiky grassy dunes to reed-specked mud, where the water wavers between salt and fresh. In the distance, the tide mill stands sentinel, black and battered against the cool calm of the morning sky, the only man-made structure in a landscape slowly crumbling back into the sea.
Bob!
The woman's voice rings out above the volley of barks as she pants to catch up.
Bob, you rascal! Drop it! Drop it, I say. What have you found?
As she draws closer, the dog tugs again at the object protruding from the mud, trying to pull it free.
Bob, you filthy brute, you're covered! Let it go!
Oh, God, it's not another dead sheep, is it? It's the last heroic yank that sends the dog staggering back along the shore, something in its jaw. Triumphant, he scrambles up the bank to lay the object at the feet of his owner. And as she stands, looking dumbstruck, the dog panting at her feet, the silence returns to the bay, like a tide coming in. Rule 1. Tell a lie. The sound is just an ordinary text alert, a quiet beep beep in the night that does not wake Owen, and would not have woken me except that I was already awake, lying there, staring into the darkness, the baby at my breast, snuffling, not quite feeding, not quite unlatching. I lie there for a moment, thinking about the text, wondering who it could be. Who'd be texting at this hour? None of my friends would be awake. Unless it's Millie gone into labour already. God, it can't be Millie, can it? I'd promised to take Noah if Millie's parents couldn't get up from Devon in time to look after him, but I never really thought... I can't quite reach a phone from where I'm lying. And at last I unlatch Freya with a finger in the corner of her mouth and rock her gently onto her back, milk-sated, her eyes rolling back in her head like someone stoned. I watch her for a moment, my palm resting lightly on her firm little body, feeling the thrum of her heart in the birdcage of her chest as she settles. And then I turn to check my phone, my own heart quickening slightly, like a faint echo of my daughter's. As I tap in my PIN, squinting slightly at the brightness of the screen, I tell myself to stop being silly. It's 4 weeks until Millie's due. It's probably just a spam text. Have you considered claiming a refund for your payment protection insurance? But when I get the phone unlocked, it's not Millie, and the text is only 3 words. I need you. It is 3:30 a.m., and I am very, very awake. Pacing the cold kitchen floor, biting at my fingernails to try and quell the longing for a cigarette. I haven't touched one for nearly 10 years, but the need for one ambushes me at odd moments of stress and fear. I need you. I don't need to ask what it means, because I know, just as I know who sent it, even though it's from a number I don't recognize. Kate. Kate Attigan. Just the sound of her name brings her back to me, like a vivid rush. The smell of her soap, the freckles across the bridge of her nose, cinnamon against olive. Kate, Fatima, Fia, and me. I close my eyes and picture them all, the phone still warm in my pocket, waiting for the texts to come through. Fatima will be lying asleep beside Ali, curled into his spine. Her reply will come around 6 a.m. when she gets up to make breakfast for Nadia and Samir and get them ready for school. Thea is harder to picture. If she's working night, she'll be in the casino, where phones are forbidden to staff, and shut up in lockers until their shifts are finished. She'll roll off shift at 8 in the morning, perhaps. Then she'll have a drink with the other girls, and then she'll reply, wired up with a successful night dealing with punters, collating chips, watching for card sharps and professional gamblers. And Kate?
Kate must be awake. She sent the text, after all. She'll be sitting at her dad's work table. Hers, now, I suppose, in the window overlooking the reach, with the waters turning pale grey in the pre-dawn light, reflecting the clouds and the dark hulk of the tide mill.
She will be smoking, as she always did.
Her eyes will be on the tides, the endlessly shifting, eddying tides, on the view that never changes and yet is never the same from one moment to the next, just like Kate herself.
Her long hair will be drawn back from her face, showing her fine bones and the lines that 32 years of wind and sea have etched at the corners of her eyes. Her fingers will be stained with oil paint, ground into the cuticles, deep beneath the nails, and her eyes will be at their darkest slate blue, deep and unfathomable. She will be waiting for our replies.
But she knows what we'll say, what we've always said, whenever we've got that text, those three words.
I'm coming. I'm coming. I'm coming.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.